Some quick review from this morning's class, text 27. The last and the summary verse of Sadhu Sangastaka. Boys, will you stop being boys? That's not possible. So the translation reads, thus, by not engaging in the service of the modes of material nature, but by developing Krishna consciousness, knowledge in renunciation, and by practicing yoga, in which the mind is always fixed in devotional service unto the Supreme Personality, Godhead, one achieves my association in this very life, for I am the Supreme Personality, the Absolute Truth. After this verse, Devahuti speaks, Maitreya speaks a verse, and then in Maitreya's summary, he comments, as it's said here, that this Sankhya process, its devotional service in its purest form, and it has two components. It has a philosophy component or an analysis component, and it has a meditational yoga component. So the form is appropriate and specific to Satya Yuga. The form in Kali Yuga is different, but the components are the same. There's a process. People sometimes ask us, do you have a process of meditation in the Hare Krishna movement? And the answer is, what are you talking about? Manmana. Yes, there's a process. So, yes, the process of meditation, simply mantra yoga meditation. But not just even mantra, whatever one does, always think of Krishna. So there's a process of fixing the mind, and there's a process of understanding where everything comes from and acting accordingly. So a philosophy component and a detachment component, control of mind and senses component. So the form is specific to what's going to be described later of the process of meditation. If you think that you might live for 100,000 years, you can try that process. And if you don't think that that's so likely, then you can try the process that has the same essence as appropriate for the age of Kali, specifically the chanting of the holy name. So in the purport, Prabhupada discusses, and he names, so here's some pictures. See if you can identify the process. Shravanam. Kirtanam. That's Prahlad Maharaj. Vishnu Smaranam. I think I'm going to need to help you with the next one. Vandanam, right. Atmani, no? Padasevanam. Archanam. This is Dasyam. It also is Archanam, but Dasyam. Sakyam. Atmanivedana. How does that fit in? Atmanivedana. Who's pictured here in the middle? How did he... You want to volunteer the answer? Bali Maharaj. What's the connection between Bali Maharaj and Atmanivedana? Do you know? He offered everything to him. Including his head, right? Because there were two paces of land and he covered everything in the whole creation. So Lord Vishnu said, you promised me three paces of land. He said, there's one thing remaining. Please put your foot on my head. So full surrender. Atmanivedana. Bali Maharaj. Who is that right behind Bali Maharaj? Sukracharya. Very good. And who is Sukracharya? the priest of the daityas. And why does Sukracharya look unhappy? Yeah, Vishnu will take everything, and then you can't give me anything. So those are the nine processes of devotional service, indicated by the verse that this is the purport of, and the message. In the first part of the message is when one becomes matured in this process of devotional service, the influence of the modes of material nature is not acting, in part because we don't serve them. They may be moving matter, influencing matter, but if you withdraw consciousness from trying to be an enjoyer of those configurations of matter, the influence of the modes of nature subsides. Yay! When one engages in spiritual activities, in devotional service, television and chips disappear. It's not something that one participates in, opportunities to engage in sense gratificatory activities. Rather, one engages in cultivation of activities of devotion unto Krishna. And this is always guided by proper knowledge. It's not blindly done, or whimsically done, or sentimentally done, but with proper guidance, starting with scripture. This is a nice slide. Different from different positions, the performance of yajna, the performance of hearing, the performance of meditation, the performance of worship, they all lead to, if done properly, the yoga dharmas lead to remembrance of the personality of Godhead. So in our Bhagavad Dharma process, especially hearing. This is directly a quote from the purport. Lord Chaitanya therefore approved the process of hearing from realized devotees about the pastimes of the Lord. And this is a nice King Prachini Bari hearing from Narada. If one meekly and submissively hears about the activities of the Lord from a realized soul, he will be able to conquer the Supreme Lord, who is unconquerable by any other process. Conquering the Supreme Lord doesn't mean what a materialist might think it means. It doesn't mean you become greater than God. Rather, it means that love is something so attractive to the personality of Godhead that he may subordinate himself to the love of his devotee, and that way conquered. So again, hearing the final sentence of the purport of text 27. Hearing, or association with devotees, is the most important function for self-realization. Not only Narada instructing Vyas, as we see here, but the principle of hearing from a qualified person. So that's our little review. And we'll now be covering, hopefully, four verses. Four verses. What happened? Oh, there it is. So text, those of you that you're following along with your book, text 28, Devahuti now speaks. On hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, "What kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet. Which may seem a little strange because there he is right in front of her. He's appeared as her son. She can just reach out and touch his lotus feet. And but she's feeling she wants to qualify herself. This is how a devotee feels. Even she's qualified. Even we may someday become qualified. The mood of a devotee is this humble mood, feeling I wish to qualify myself. What's coming to mind is Vidura, who was Yamaraj in that position as Vidura. And it was already demonstrated how dear Krishna held Vidura to him and how dear Vidura held Krishna. But when he left the palace, being insulted by Duryodhana, he wanted to qualify himself to be in Krishna's presence because he felt himself contaminated by palace life and Duryodhana and his buddies. Just to be in their company, and he felt compromised. He knew of his skullduggery and malicious activity and couldn't check it, and he couldn't check Dhritarashtra from permitting it. He felt contaminated, so he wanted to purify himself. But he was already very dear to Krishna. So this is the mood of a Vaishnava, and so many other examples can be cited. Lord Chaitanya's associates, Sanatana Goswami, repeating over and over again to Lord Chaitanya, please don't touch me, this body is contaminated. Or Haridas Thakur feeling, I'm so fallen. I can't enter the temple of Lord Jagannath. I'll observe from outside. Or when all the devotees were served prasad, it wasn't false. It wasn't a practice that he was observing. It was his mood. He felt unqualified to take prasad with all the devotees. And so on. Humility is a natural trait for a Vaishnava, and it shouldn't be contrived or cosmetic. It should be whatever the feeling is that we're actually feeling and trying to cultivate. Mood of humility. So Devahuti is exhibiting that. Short purport, Prabhupada writes, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that no one is barred from rendering service to the Lord. Striyo Vaishyastusa Shudras. Whether one is a woman, laborer, or merchant, if he has engaged himself in devotional service, he is promoted to the highest perfectional state and goes home, back to Godhead. The devotional service most suitable for different types of devotees is determined and fixed by the spiritual master. Short purport, very important message. Then she goes on, the mystic yoga system, which you have explained, aims at the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is meant for completely ending material existence. So she's ready. Please let me know the nature of that yoga system. How many ways are there by which one can understand in truth that sublime yoga? So yoga in the sense that she's asking here is the broader sense of yoga linking with the Supreme, as indicated in the purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur indicates there's this yoga, that yoga, the other yoga. And they all have some target towards the Supreme. But for the most part, they're insufficient. That is to say, they don't fully reach the lotus feet of the Lord. They're targeted towards, but they don't fully reach. And in those cases, there's chance of falling down. So what's that situation upon attaining that there's no chance of falling down? Which form of yoga are you recommending for me? Because the mystic yoga system, apparently, can be applied in different ways by different persons, at least some part here and some part there. And so she wants the complete... So she's going... Explanation. She's going more deeply into the subject matter that he's outlined. By her question, she's inviting that, and that's what happens. In the purport, first part of the paragraph, Prabhupada speaks of the different yoga systems, details them a little bit, Gyan Yoga, Hatha Yoga, so on. But here, Devahuti especially refers to the Bhakti Yoga system, which has already been primarily explained by the Lord. In fact, this chapter is dedicated to that, but there's a whole lot more of the chapter following, so the details of that Bhakti Yoga process she's inviting, and so he gives it. The word nirvanatmanam in this verse is very significant. Nirvanatmanam. It's a name that she's using to address her son or Kapila Dev. So what does nirvana mean? Who knows what nirvana means?
Liberation.
Liberation? Any other ideas? Nirvana. Huh? Wiping out oneself. Any other ideas? Yeah? End of material existence. Excuse me? A little louder? Devoid of material qualities. Entering into the spiritual realm. It's more the other. Because we're going to... Well, I'll read at the bottom. At the bottom of the purport, bottom of the page... Buddhists use that term, nirvana. The goal of Buddhism is nirvana. And the expression that we heard, one of them was ending one's material existence. But what's beyond one's material existence, they don't say. It says it's nirvana. It's voidism. So what's voidism? That's not entering into spiritual existence. It's negation of material existence. It's negation of existence. Wow. Negation of existence. That's the goal. Nirvana does not mean finishing the existence of the soul. But if you don't have a conception of soul and you enter into nirvana, you annihilate your existence. Voidism. It's not a happy philosophy. Where does everything come from? It comes from nothing. And where does everything go to? It goes to nothing. So what's going on now? Nothing. What's the meaning to existence? Nothingness. Nirvana. If you void of, or in the absence of, a conception of the soul. I had a discussion on this topic with a Chinese student at MIT who was attending school in Harvard. And he, you know, he's reading Buddhist literature and he considers himself a Buddhist, and like not just an armchair Buddhist, a practicing Buddhist. And we had it wasn't an argumentative discussion, it was agreement on the points that I'm making to you right now. For example, from my experience in China, one of the questions that people commonly ask in different places is, what are the similarities and differences between Buddhism and Krishna consciousness? So one of the similarities is both believe in reincarnation. A difference is, what is it that's reincarnating? And I ask you, my Buddhist friend, according to Buddhist teachings, what is it that's reincarnating? And the more scholarly ones say, well, there's different ideas because there are different types of Buddhism. Okay, what are some of them? And you don't get a clear answer. I haven't gotten a clear answer. And one thing that's consistent is the absence of a concept of the soul that's reincarnating. That some kind of combination of matter that's put together because of some illusion or false ego thing, whatever the terminology is. And then when you dismantle false ego, you dismantle existence. And you stop reincarnating. Besides, how does that happen? Like, what's the focal point that brings this false ego together? Or allows it to separate? You know, consciousness is, it's another thing that's absent. It's another illusion. Because what exists? Nothing. Yikes. Anyway, rather than that whole topic of Buddhism and Krishna consciousness, just specific to Nirvana, it's mentioned Devahuti is addressing her son as Nirvanatmas. Nirmanatma, Nirvanatma, which means, O embodiment of Nirvana. And one of the definitions given here is that which ends material existence. You who can end material existence, but you give spiritual existence. Oh. We'll go through the purport a bit more. Unless one, just after that in the purport, unless one accepts the process of devotional service, one cannot end the continuation of material existence. So is there no opportunity for liberation besides devotional service? Here's how Prabhupada addresses it. As far as jnanis are concerned, they are interested in jnana yoga. But even if one elevates oneself after a great performance of austerity to the Brahman effulgence, there is a chance of falling down again to the material world. Therefore, Jnana Yoga does not actually end material existence. Arunya Krishchena Param Padam Tada Patantyado Yadmar Yushmat Angraya. If one hasn't taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, there's every chance, in fact, one will fall down. Up, 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 up. Without taking shelter, one will have to come back down. However high one may go, one will have to fall down, because our nature is shelter in the lotus feet of the Lord. If you don't take shelter in the lotus feet of the Lord, you can't just stay in outer space somewhere. You come back. So that's not ending. It's interrupting, but it's not ending. It's a neutral place, but it's not the positive spiritual shelter of that ends material existence. Therefore, this nomenclature, Devahuti addressing her son in this way. Similarly, the Hatha Yoga system. Now here it's that's that part of the Ashtanga Yoga system, we just shortened it, the Hatha Yoga system, which aims at the localized aspect of the Lord Paramatma. It has been experienced that many yogis, such as Vishwamitra, fall down. But bhakti yogis Once approaching the Supreme Personality of God, had never come back to this material world as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yad gatva na divartante. Upon going, one never comes back. Chakvadeham punarjanma naiti. After giving up this body, he never comes back again to accept a material body. So Gyan Yoga doesn't end material existence. Hatha Yoga doesn't end material existence. And then Nirvana doesn't mean ending existence. Nirvana does not finish the existence of the soul. The soul is ever existing. Therefore, Nirvana means to end one's material existence. Someone offered that as a definition. And to end material existence means to go back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, there are several places in Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada uses this, or translates the phrase apavarga as ultimate liberation, when it's referring to bhakti process. And other times, apavarga means merging or entering into the Brahman effulgence, which isn't ultimate liberation. It doesn't end one's material existence because, again, there is falling down. But it's a neutral space where modes of nature aren't acting, karma isn't acting, and you're still existing. It's something like a twinkling star in the sky. How long can you twinkle without doing something? You have to do something. If you haven't taken shelter of service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one comes back to this plane and does philanthropic work, or something in the mode of goodness, or some even become politicians. So continuing, sometimes it is asked how the living entity falls down from the spiritual world to the material world. Let's skip this paragraph and go on. No, we'll read it. It's one of these unending topics. Here is the answer. Da 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 da. Unless one is elevated to the Vaikuntha planets, directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is prone to fall down, either from the impersonal Brahman realization or from the ecstatic trance of meditation. Another word in this verse is Bhagavat Bana. Very significant. Bana means arrow. One of the names of the Supreme Lord is Pushpa Bana. Prabhupada named one of his disciples Pushpa Bana. Nice devotee. So, flower arrow. So, the graphics that I have for this, I don't know if I'm going to get to show it because you're not going to do a review, but it shows there's a devotee and he has a little arrow, and then the graphics go, the arrow goes boop, 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 and touches the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Then you can do it again. That's the bhana. Bhagavat bhana. The bhakti yoga system is just like an arrow aiming up to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The bhakti yoga system never urges one towards the impersonal Brahman effulgence or to the point of paramatma realization. The bhana or arrow is so sharp and swift that it goes directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, penetrating the regions of impersonal Brahman and localized paramatma. I didn't bring the volume with me, but there's a nice verse in chapters, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Text 42. One of you has your iPad and you can look it up in the database. 7:15:42. Nandasuta is busy looking it up. So, in that verse, it describes the chanting process. Again, using the metaphor of an arrow, that the chanting is, it's immediately, it's not only, it reaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the arrow is none different than the personality of Godhead, and you're immediately there, no delay. And that's how Lord Chaitanya has made our access to Bhakti Yoga so accessible, so easy. Just Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Immediately we're there. Immediately we're in touch with Krishna through that sound vibration. She then concludes, let me know when you found the verse. She then concludes text 30 with another humble submission. My dear son Kapila, after all, I'm a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. But if you will kindly explain it to me, even though I'm not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. Here's the, hopefully, the arrow verse. Yeah. The chapter 15 is instructions for civilized human beings. The verse reads, 10 kinds of air acting within the body are compared to the spokes of the chariot wheel, and the top and bottom of the wheel itself are called religion and irreligion. The living entity in the bodily concept of life is the owner of the chariot. The Vedic mantra Pranava is the bow. The pure living entity himself is the arrow, and the target is the Supreme Being. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has his commentary that's presented in the purport. So, the idea is, if properly guided and directed, the process of bhakti, the Bhagavat Bana, immediately brings us in contact with the personality of Godhead. How fortunate. Such a maze and unlimited list of possibilities and things to get lost in material existence. And it's to get out of material existence is handed to us, like, here you are. How fortunate. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, knowledge of the absolute truth is not very easily understood by ordinary, less intelligent men. No big emphasis on how women are, whatever they are. But if the spiritual master is kind enough to the disciple, however unintelligent the disciple may be, then by the divine grace of the spiritual master, everything is revealed. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, he refers to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description. By mercy, things that are not possible become possible. And without getting that mercy, things remain impossible. We stay befuddled. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. With the mercy of Krishna, everything is possible. Ending material existence is possible. Reaching the personality of Godhead, as he says in the previous verse that he spoke, in this lifetime. So going back to Godhead is not something that happens after this life. It's not something that it's in some distant place. in one sense is in a distant place because of our consciousness. But it's immediately accessible in this lifetime, in this moment, now, by surrender to the personality of Godhead. One is at once brought to that position. Just going to read one more verse. And what I'm thinking is this evening, Sunday program, I'll just speak on the next verse, the first reply that Kapila Dev gives, because it's a very broad, principle-based verse. Then he starts going into details on the principles that he enunciates. And the details get really detailed. But the principles are something I think would be good for a Sunday feast audience to hear. The Maitreya, if you can remember, Maitreya is having just heard Krishna speak to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita. Krishna said to Maitreya, there's some service for you, Maitreya. Very soon, Vidura is going to come, my dear devotee, and I'd like you to explain everything to him that you've heard from me, as I explained it to Uddhava. So when he left, when Krishna left, Maitreya left, to heading into the mountains. Uddhava was still there, smashed, feeling great separation. Vidura first saw Uddhava, and they spent a whole day and night and into the next morning, and then Uddhava left. So Uddhava pointed the direction that Maitreya had gone. So Vidura went and found Maitreya. In fact, that picture that shows the Shravanam of the nine processes, that's Vidura at the feet of Maitreya, hearing from Maitreya. So Maitreya and Vidura are having these discussions about the personality of Godhead and the process of creation. And so Vidura is hearing all this from Maitreya, and then that's chronologically before the Bhagavatam is spoken by Maharaj Parikshit, right? Because Maharaj Parikshit is after Krishna had left. The Pandavas left, and Yudhisthira turned the kingdom over to Maharaj Parikshit. Then Maharaj Parikshit is cursed, and he's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So chronologically, and then after that is Suta Goswami narrating to the sages what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami, who's narrating what he heard from Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva and Maitreya are dear friends, so Maitreya has shared with Vidura, Maitreya has shared with Vyasadeva what exchange he had with Vidura. You with me? It's just history. So, but it's layer upon layer upon layer. It doesn't change because time and personalities. They're respecting great personalities who have had these wonderful exchanges. So Maitreya is describing to Vidura the exchange that took place long before in Satyayuga, between Kapila Dev and Devahuti. Maitreya said, after hearing the statement of his mother, Devahuti, Kapila could understand her purpose. Doesn't state what that purpose was, but she wants pure devotional service. She wants to end her material existence and be fixed at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead eternally in his service. Kapila became compassionate towards her because of being born of her body. How can the Supreme Lord be born of someone's body? He made an appearance that way. It's the parental affection. And he likes having such love, as she likes giving such love. He described the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization, as received by disciplic succession. Combination, so the Sankhya system of philosophy is but a combination of devotional service and mystic realization. It's Satya Yuga. And so the process of achieving spiritual perfection in Satya Yuga is what? Meditation. So he's got a meditation dimension. And that's going to be coming up in the later explanation. He just a later chapter, a whole chapter dedicated to how you do it. But it's not just a technique of how you do it, and that's the essence. That's not the essence. The essence is devotional service. It's the consciousness behind that practice. And it's also with the practice is the knowledge of who is the source of everything, or what is the source of everything. What's the absolute truth? In Kapila Dev's talks in the next chapter, he says to Devahuti, now that I've described this process, now I'm going to enumerate the different tattvas or realities, components, Prabhupada translates it, of the absolute truth. Just like breaking it down. It's analytical. This is different than that, and that's different than the next thing. But they all work together ultimately to bring about existence, and if used properly, to carry us to the source. Because that's the goal. Connect with the source. Connect with the personality of Godhead. That's the devotional component. There's the analytical component, and there's the meditational component. So it's not surprising that some people like just analysis. They don't like the personality of Godhead. They just like analysis. Some people don't like the personality of Godhead. They just like meditation. They feel good. It suits them. But it's incomplete. And how you get it complete? You have to get it from the right source. Have to get it from the right source. And that's the message that we just heard, that from Sadhu Sangha. Otherwise, you'll get a misconception. Or you won't even have any interest. You'll do something else. Or call it yoga and do something else. Give it the same name, just do something else. It goes on. Call it meditation and do something else. I shared that with you, this group at one university, and we went around the room, and everyone had a different idea of, I practice meditation, and it's something that's just invented. And Prabhupada objected to that. He took objection and expressed it. And some people don't like that when you take objection to their practice. But as Hari Vilas said yesterday evening, if devotees don't do that, who's going to do that? Who's going to set the record straight? Who's going to guide people to the right position? Of course, one has to do that carefully, expertly, thoughtfully, wisely, and sensitive to the circumstance. But at least in a circle like this, and those that are reading in the third canto, chapter 25 of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada gets explicit. Cut the knot of affinity for material existence under different names. Even call them nice names. But the principle of speculation and sense gratification are fundamentally to be eliminated if one wants to go forward. So the message here, it's the little sound bite, little Maitreya is, you know, saying coming attractions, is the Sankhya philosophy that has these two components. Devotional service is the essence, and there's also a mystic realization component. I think it's okay that I can share this. During a visit to China recently, I met a professor who's like 80 years old. And not only he's an esteemed professor at his university, he's revered by the government. The government takes guidance from him. He's guiding, he was describing some projects that he's guiding the government in doing to showcase the culture of China. And gobs of money is being poured into the things that he's giving advice for. So, at the same time, he's a very broad-minded person. So, and he appreciates, he knows the devotees and appreciates the devotees. And so I met him, we had some discussion. And one of the things that he has a fascination for is this mystic realization component. There are, in different ways he was saying, through a translator, with just radiating happiness and joy, describing that there are persons that can see things that the rest of us can't see. They can experience things that the rest of us can't experience. And he wants that experience. He wants, although he's Gyan-wise, he's at the top of the mountain. But he wishes to have experience, a deep mystical experience, and appreciates those that have that capacity. So one of the things that I was thinking but didn't express, it's actually expressed in a different way, that's insufficient. What the wisdom of ancient India, that's the language I was using, offers is go to the source, not just the mystical experience of something, rather than the details of the conversation. That was the essence of the communication. And nice person. And maybe one day he'll take up the process of devotional service. Not averse. And anyway, if whatever the attainment one may have in those arenas, knowledge or mysticism, just like we just read, it can't deliver one from material existence. And the most mystical of all mystical experiences is to no longer have material existence. And what's that like? It's a life of pure devotion, unmixed devotion to the personality of Godhead. And we're so fortunate. We have this. Please take it. Please take it. Lord Chaitanya is pleading. Please take it. And the fruit of love of God. Please take it. And the fruit of love of God in the form of Braja Prem. Please take it. We're so fortunate. It's made so easy. And something that will help us in opening and receiving that gift is this Srimad Bhagavatam's message, along with the chanting of Hare Krishna, which Srila Prabhupada brought. He brought Srimad Bhagavatam and dedicated great effort, along with the rest of the Krishna conscious activities that he was doing, is the translation of Srimad Bhagavatam to help us receive that gift properly and cultivate that gift. So speak a little bit more this evening. See how that goes with a completely fresh audience and the Sunday crowd with all the stuff that goes on Sunday. We'll see what happens. Any comments or questions?
There's a question online.
Okay.
From Sara Prabhu. Question is, how to be a sincere devotee or identify sincere devotees? Are there any general checklist kind of thing you could use? How do they talk, behave in the temple and outside the temple?
Well, certainly there are scriptural standards to evaluate or to examine. What sincere means, or the import of sincere, Sahotra Swami gave a description of that one time. It comes from a Latin word that has to do with, I forget exactly, but it has to do with marble that doesn't have any lines in it, just like this marble floor. That's not sincere, because it has lines. But the marble where the deity is made of or carved from, there's no lines. So it's not, there's nothing but one thing. That's the root. So when one is sincere, it means there's nothing else. Or at least in the cultivation stage, that's the intent. So a standard of a devotee who is sincere is there's consistent cultivation, practice, following. Prabhupada would sometimes use the word ardent. Ardent means strong, intense, tivra, as in tivrena bhakti yogena. It's very strong, with determination, sustained over time. There may be some other things, but those other things are extinguished, burned, exhausted by sincere. So a symptom of sincerity is that consistent over time effort to attain bhakti or please Krishna. So that's something internal. How do you measure that which is internal? At least the evidence of a continual striving. So someone may be imperfect and make mistakes. That's okay. Sincere is one who continues to strive in the right direction. That's the main component. It's the same thing as the eligibility of a candidate for devotional service. One is sincere, like earlier discussion today. And that means another, so an exhibition of that is that when one finds that, one finds light, one follows the light. And one doesn't go off into the darkness. One stays on the path of heading to the light. And so then a symptom is such person's life becomes more luminous, more progressively more consistent, more and more and more and more progressively consistent with what the light says, what the teachings of purity says. So one may not start pure, but one can become pure by the agency of sincerity and striving by right means, as Krishna says. And you can go down a bit and say, one who is very regulated, that's part of consistency. And mode of goodness symptoms are displayed by that person consistently, respectful, very careful in one's dealings, careful in the sense of speaking the truth palatably, mode of goodness. Speech is to speak the truth palatably. So symptoms that are minus the lower modes of nature, and progressively developing more that consistent quality of simply goodness minus the modes of nature. That's a symptom of sincerity in devotional service. Selflessness, that others who I'm trying to serve should be pleased, and that's the objective. And it's consistent. Not sometimes, sometimes not. Consistent. Those are some thoughts on that topic. Okay.
So one of my students, I don't know if he's here in the Discord yourself class, so he attended five of your lectures and he's asking the question, Sankhya leads to bhakti, that is what I understood from this class. But how?
Not exactly. What Krishna says is they're non-different. Chapter 5, text number 4. Some say they're different. Krishna says they're not different. Krishna says, some say they're different, they're actually not different. One is emphasizing, he's in the purport is described, finding the root of existence, and the other is wanting the root of existence. So they may follow sequentially. I can get out my hose and just, okay, where's the root? Oh, there's the root. Then I can water the root. Or first find the root and then get the hose. But it's a subset of the same thing. As far as what Kapila Deva is teaching, one can analyze over here and over here, but it's actually one entity, one thing.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Pick somebody that you like and give him the microphone. He likes you. Okay. Let's see if he likes you after your question.
Alright, the example that you mentioned about the tree.
About the which?
The tree and the axe that the spiritual master is to.
The
sea? No,
tree and the axe.
Tree.
Ah. Okay.
Similar example, which is in Bhagavad Gita with the banyan tree.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What does it mean that it's upside down?
It's a reflection. That's what it means.
So the reflection. This
Let's go to a lake, and look on the opposite side of the lake and see a tree, and then we'll look in the lake and see it upside down. The roots are growing down. Excuse me. The branches are growing down. And the roots are growing up. That's upside down. Then there's the tree with the branches growing up and the roots growing down. So this world is compared to that. It's a reflection of the spiritual world. Okay? The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. It looks like, but it isn't. It's a reflection. And what's not to be done is taken as what's to be done. And what's to be done is taken as not to be done. It's ignorance. Knowledge and the mode of ignorance. That's the material world. And happiness and the mode of ignorance and everything else. It's an influence of the covering of the real thing. A reflection of the real thing. Okay?
So the reflection doesn't mean that it has a merit of itself.
No. To think that it has a merit unto itself, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead says to Lord Brahma, know that to be my illusory energy. It exists, but not unto itself, nor is there value in it unto itself.
Seminars such as these, when we hear, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, like understand that the focus has to be internal cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
But the tendency is very strong towards external achievement within devotional service. And how?
By attending seminars like this. And practicing. Taking it home. And practicing. And with your, you know, in your heart, in your life, with your family and with your friends, and you remind each other and you practice and you cultivate. Exactly what Kapila Dev says. Receive the knowledge and then cultivate it, expand it. That's how. Because the conditioned tendency and then the spiritual reality. And we move to the spiritual reality. And then it'll come out, but let it come from the inside out, not just paint it on. Then it'll wash off. Let it be inside. Practice, cultivate. Continue hearing. And practice and cultivate. Keep doing that. Sincerely. Sincerely. With sincere devotees that want to do the same. Yes?
One more question.
Sure.
So, one of the slides I read that association and hearing, the association means hearing, something like that. And how do we hear from each other when we are.
I'll read the sentence again so that you can get it explicitly. It's the last sentence in the purport of text 27. Hearing, or associating with devotees, is the most important function for self-realization. That's the one. And now the question is?
So I understand hearing as in hearing lectures and attending seminars.
Uh-huh.
How do we hear from each other?
Oh, you hear from each other all the time. As soon as we stop class, what happens?
Is it like just discussion of what you
mean?
Yes. That is an aspect of cultivation.
Yes, yes, exactly. And then apply it and discuss what your experience is in trying to apply it. Because you have the same project. Go back to Godhead. And we're part of a team, going back to Godhead together. We talk with our team members how we're going to, our part in going back to Godhead. Take that thing that, you know, from the corporate sector and apply it in your devotional life. Yeah. And then that's the best friend, the one who you do that with. You're being the best friend for them by doing that. Go ahead.
I have a question about our disciple succession. Like on the altar, we have Srila Prabhupada's picture, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Shrodas Babaji, Bhakti Arun Thakur, and then right now we don't have, but we sometimes also have Jagannathas Babaji.
Yes.
So I know that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was disciple of Bhakti Shrodas Babaji, and he was disciple of Jagannathas Babaji.
There's a Babaji disciple.
Gaurakishore
Das Babaji, my understanding is, he was a Babaji, he took Babaji from Jagannath Das Babaji. But he heard from Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
He heard from?
Yes, it was a Shiksha relationship.
Okay, so he's a Shiksha Guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a Shiksha Guru, and so that can come
into the Bhakti succession? Yes. This disciplic succession that we see in pictures is described in Bhakti Siddhanta's writings, and he accepted like that. And we're following Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada who accepted like that. He had a Diksha Guru, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. But he heard from Bhakti Vinod Thakur.
Yes. So both Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru are there in the disciple succession then?
In some cases, yes. She's digesting. Okay. Here's another. In the disciplic succession that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur presents, it's the principal, primary, most significant acharyas, meaning that you go from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj and you look into the disciplic succession and there's actually several generations not named. Not missing, but just not named. Because it's primary. So the vision and teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur were received not from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, but from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, but his Diksha Guru was somebody else. Should I say it again? The Diksha Guru of Bhakti Vinod was not Jagannath Das Babaji. The Diksha Guru of Jagannath Das Babaji was Bipin Bihari Goswami. So he was initiated in disciplic succession, but our disciplic succession shows Jagannath Das Babaji. And even somewhere in that time frame is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's not pictured or named in our disciplic succession, although he's certainly very significant. But there's this relationship of instruction that Bhaktivinoda Thakur received instruction, invited Jagannath Das Babaji when he discovered the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come and confirm. And he came all the way from Vrindavan and confirmed. So there was a relationship, not just an existing personality in disciplic succession.
So when you talk about this unbroken chain of disciplic succession going all the way to Lord Krishna, it does not have to be through the...
Yes and no. They were all initiated in disciplic succession. They were initiated in disciplic succession. All of them. But the principal relationship may or may not be identified according to the Diksha line. And examples we've already indicated, two of them. And actually three of them, preceding Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Look into the disciplic line. There's some generations that are not named, although there was initiation in that line. So there's... Okay, digest it and pass the microphone. Someone? Yes?
In one of the verses, we read that if the spiritual master is kind enough, then even an unintelligent disciple will not progress. So I wanted to know, what does the spiritual master do when he knows that something
is not very intelligent?
Yeah, and he's done something really bad and the consciousness is corrupt. So what does the spiritual master do and what action should the student take?
Depends on the circumstance, what the spiritual master will do and how they regard that. It's certainly not judgmental. The essence is what can be done to elevate. And it depends on the circumstance. Something else? Over here? Oh, you have something, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I didn't mean to argue, maybe I'm wrong or something.
Go ahead and argue.
No, what I really mean to say is, like on this Tuesday only, I think I heard in Haridas Prabhu's class that all the disciplic succession which is mentioned in the first section of page of Bhagavad Gita, those are all Shiksha Gurus.
I don't know if he said that. But I know that they're not all Shiksha Gurus. Well, let's say it this way. In some cases, the Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru are the same. How does that work for you? Is that all right?
how one can increase the quality without necessarily increasing the quantity of devotionals.
Yes, purity. Becoming attracted to one-word answers. These by purity, quality increases. Chant your rounds without offense, for example, and you've increased your devotional service exponentially, because not only your connection with Krishna through chanting, which is devotional service, has increased in quality, but when you interact with whoever you interact with, start with your husband or whoever else you interact with, that service to your husband and whoever else you interact with will be magnified by just from this qualitative increase, etc. So without by striving for purity or attaining some quantum further of purity, you've increased your devotional service without adding anything quantitatively.
But that cannot happen magically, right? So what one has to do to...
You strive for it. The means is given. Take it. That's how. The internal cultivation topic. So it doesn't need something quantitative external. It's qualitative internal. And then it will increase. Krishna will give you more service. It just happens that way. Someone else? We're at 11:35, so we'll just take a few more questions and end.
Hi, Krishna Mahal.
Okay.
Over the last few days, you have been very nicely explaining both these wonderful verses of Sadhus and Vajtaka. My question is, should we strive to consciously cultivate these qualities of a sadhu?
Yes.
Or should we just associate with sadhus?
No. Not just, but yes to the first one. And the mood should be, what should the mood be? In my association, let me come before these personalities who I regard with great appreciation and esteem and gratitude, that my service to them be more pleasing. That's the horse that pulls the cart. Not the other way around. The cart doesn't pull the horse. If I develop these qualities, then I'll be more appreciated or something. But that their happiness and satisfaction. Read the last verses of chapter 12 sometime today, where this quality, that quality, this is very pleasing to me, that quality, very pleasing to me, that quality, very pleasing to me. So the message is, be pleasing to Krishna. Krishna kindly help me develop this quality that's pleasing to you, so that I can be more pleasing to you, because that's the objective. And same with sadhus.
I should be doing both parallelly, right?
But not exactly parallel. It's the horse pulls the cart, not they move parallel. If I understand your question properly, first things first, and the first thing pulls the other things. It's like Krishna Ekasharana, and then there's the Tathastha Lakshana characteristics. So do we just surrender and don't think about, are we doing the other things? Because we're surrendering, we're thinking about doing the other things. And then Krishna decorates with the other things. That's bhushana. Ornaments. Krishna decorates his devotee with nice qualities. But what's the horse, what's pulling that decoration is, I want to please Krishna. I want to please Krishna's devotees. So instead of something, speaking harshly or rudely or mindlessly or something or other, I mean, because I want to please in service. You cultivate.
Yeah, because Maharaj, earlier in the previous session you were telling not to become sincere, we should associate with devotees who are sincere. So
yes.
I was thinking in order to even cultivate those qualities of a sadhu, we should, when we associate with, you know, sadhus, then we naturally can invite those qualities.
Yes, but it's not passive. I also said that. It's active. So what do? You cultivate. The language is right in the, you know, you hear and then you cultivate. It's right in the language of Kapila Dev. Okay. Up front here, you give men some chance to speak.
One of the things which I have been thinking sometimes is a blocker for me is I hear from devotees who are pretty good at that. Just being at work and just the pressures of work, etc., I get disturbed with that or anxious. And that kind of thing can, you know, with deadlines or things, etc., and that can be as a blocker to constant cultivation,
sure,
of devotional service.
Sure.
And I hear from devotees who are able to do that much better. That's also, people say, oh, you're not disturbed by things. But I myself have faced the difficulties with that. I just wanted to see if you could see some guidance from you.
Peter Burwash, you know Peter Burwash, yes? One of his slides is, forget, you know, it's a mundane example of a tennis player. Somebody said, you know, pressure is the honor that comes to those who are successful. So, supposing you were a slouch, you know, you wouldn't feel any pressure. You wouldn't be given a situation that produces pressure. So, for a devotee, here comes the pressure. And, you know, whether it's in the workplace or whatever it is, that out of the workplace, where something, some situation, some service, there's some pressure. Now, how do you look at that? You know, part of it is what's inside, the internal cultivation part. Krishna, you're my strength. You're the ability in man. Let me apply myself to be qualified to receive your ability. Here's one example. Somebody that's in the corporate sector, they were not just a consultant, they were a full employee of some corporate place, and they ran into a problem and they needed solution to the problem, so they called their specialist to solve the problem, and there wasn't a solution, and they kept working on things and it wasn't clear what the solution was. And that devotee decided, let me just very sincerely and intently and fervently pray to Krishna in your service, because he knows that I'm a devotee of Krishna. Not so I'll get some points, but so Krishna will get some points. He'll appreciate, oh, look at this. He's a Krishna devotee, and he can do these amazing things. So for that reason, he was saying, I was praying very sincerely over a period of time. It didn't happen right away. But then something happened. Somebody that he knew that was also, experienced in the field in some other area, and the person said something, and it just clicked. And he understood Krishna. And it took, you know, they explained that to the person, the company owner and the supervisor, where it was, and I want to go down this path and work it out. The problem was solved. So he got all this accolades and bonus, and he was thinking, all glories to Krishna, because now this person has a deeper respect for Krishna, because Krishna supplied something because of being an instrument for Krishna. So though the field was something material, it was for Krishna that he was doing. So how to apply that in different circumstances life has its challenges. Hey, pick your challenge, but life has its challenges. So the wellspring of not feeling pressure, or feel rather the other way around, feel support, is the Krishna bhakti that you carry in your heart. And that's something that requires internal cultivation. And then the application is, how do I work for Krishna? In the home, in the workplace, in the temple. It's not just go wash the pots. It's how do I keep the consciousness of doing this, whatever it is, for Krishna? It's a cultivation. And therein lies the answer to your question. It's an internal, and then you apply it, the external world. Krishna consciousness is best nourished by the process of hearing in the association of sadhus. But the work is in the application part. I'll give another example that's a little different, but it relates. One devotee expressed, the part that I get is the sadhana part. The part that I don't get is, how do you do it in the workplace? In short, a little longer conversation. And I said, it's a matter of realization. So it's not a matter of, I could spell it out A to Z and you won't get it, because it's a matter of realization. So I, rather than give you the A to Z, I recommend that at least for some interval in your day, you check out of the kartaham iti manyate mode, that you're the doer, and check in to, how do I do this for Krishna in the workplace? And that was it. And some months later, they came with a report. And the report was, their supervisor at work went through some realization, because they were having some realization. They said, you know, what's going on with you? Before, it used to take, you know, give you something to do, and it would take you the same time it takes everybody else, about a week. And now you've got it done in less than a day, and you're sitting there reading your book. And then some problem arises, and I come to you with the problem. You already have it all worked out. Here's the solution to the problem. Before we even talked about there's a problem, you've got the solution to the problem. And everyone else in the workplace is backbiting and, you know, stabbing each other, and you don't do any of that. When it goes on, it doesn't disturb you. What's going on with you? I don't know if you want to hear it. No, I want to hear it. And the answer was, Krishna. Oh, forget it. You know, what's wrong with you? No, it's okay. I thought you do. So, but then some time passed, and it just continued to grow. Their realization continued to grow. Their mood of working for Krishna, not for their supervisor or the owner or anything, just working for Krishna. Consciousness was being cultivated. And then something happened. Their supervisor had a calamity. They found out their spouse had cancer. So they went to this devotee and said, I'm smashed, and you're spiritual, so I'm coming to you to hear. And that was, again, I don't know if you want to hear it. He said, yeah, I want to hear it. I really need it. I'm now needy. I'm not just skeptical. Anyway, it led them to coming to the temple and seeing the deities and meeting the devotees and meeting their spiritual master. And they didn't take up devotional service, but their attitude changed from, oh, you're kidding me, you're into that, to respect and shelter, just from that one thing. Besides, they were more productive and, you know, not harassed. They're feeling protected because of that mood, working for Krishna. It's so, if that's something that you struggle with, cultivate it. In moments where it's not pressure, just in principle. or take it offline and just in other circumstances that are not in the workplace, you cultivate doing for Krishna. And then carry that into the workplace. Borrow from that strength into a place where there's weakness and apply it. And cultivate it. Cultivate it and cultivate it. That's the internal cultivation. That's what Krishna consciousness is, the consciousness behind the activities, not the activity has to change. Unless it's forbidden activity. Anything else? Last question.
Maharaj, there is a question online.
Okay.
It's from Sarva Prabhu. He says, I've heard that even demigods were lining up in the first 5,000 years of Kali Yuga to be liberated.
Where do you hear that?
Sarva Prabhu, if you want to get some response.
That's not the essence of the question. Go on to the rest of the question.
So, we should be fortunate to be in this time of Kali Yuga. Somehow I feel that we missed the earlier opportunities of going back to Godhead in previous yugas, and we shouldn't be in this time of Kali Yuga. I'm more concerned about this generation and following generations where living luxurious lives, showing off, and bad behaviors are considered a standard. When someone lives simple life and tries to do the right things, they are considered abnormal. So is it correct to say that we are fortunate to be in this time of Kali Yuga?
Yes. Next. We're fortunate not just to be in this time of Kali Yuga, we're fortunate to be recipients of the remedy.
Maharaj, in the 28th verse purport. Srila Prabhupada says, the devotional service most suitable for different types of devotees is determined and fixed by the mercy of the spiritual master. So my question is, like during Srila Prabhupada's service with Thakur period, the disciples were given, asked to do like 64 rounds of chanting, and when Srila Prabhupada, out of mercy and due to the circumstances, I think he made it to 16 rounds minimum. So in this lineage and in future, can this go down or
that's a loaded question, because there are persons today that were initiated by Prabhupada and have gone outside of ISKCON who have lowered the standard. I won't go into it. That's not a strict follower. However, on the other hand, what Prabhupada did was, you can say, licensed or authorized or appropriate because of his spiritual stature as an acharya. So an acharya, a person of such stature, may, time, place, circumstance, make adjustments. So that answer is, it's conceivable. But let's first see that self-effulgent acharya of the stature of Srila Prabhupada. And then otherwise, no. I think I'll end with that because of the time mainly. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.